Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 44. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayaparita chetasam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samadho nabidhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Purport. Samadhi means fixed mind. The Vedic dictionary, the Nirukti, says, Samyag adhiyate smin atma tattva yathatmyam. When the mind is fixed for understanding the self, it is said to be in samadhi. Samadhi is never possible. Yeah, that's the end of the quote. Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyments and bewildered by such temporary things. They are more or less condemned by the process of material energy. Srila Prabhupada has given a short purport to this verse, which is among the most quoted of verses by those who speak philosophically within a Krishna consciousness movement. Lord Krishna, in the course of instructing Arjuna, speaks this specifically referring to persons who are Vedavadarata. They're attached to the apparent message of the Vedas, which is to live piously and in a pious way, enjoy the world, attain opulence and enjoy the world. That is the apparent message. But Krishna here points out that that's not the actual message. That's not the prime message of the Vedas or its real purpose. The real purpose is begun to be approached directly in Vedanta, the Upanishads. That actually this material world is miserable, and however much bhog, material enjoyment, and aishvarya we have, opulence we have, anyway, this world is dukhalayam ashashvatam, it's a place of misery, everything here is temporary, therefore we should be intelligent enough to get out of here, do whatever is required to get out. That means to attain the spiritual position of samadhi. Samadhi means one's intelligence is level. It's not as Krishna will, has already, from the beginning of his instructions, it will repeatedly throughout the Gita speak of the person who is stitta pragya, and this the various terms Krishna uses, stitta pragya, fixed in consciousness, kutastha, situated in the highest position, and there are various words Krishna uses to describe the person who is beyond duality, of the dualities of heat and cold, pleasure and pain, honor and dishonor, victory and defeat, gain and loss. This position can be attained by fixing one's intelligence on it. All that means to, in all situations, to remain prabuddha, with enlightened intelligence, and see that actually I have nothing to do with this world. I don't belong to it at all. But anyway, I have to act within it. But a person who is attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, in such a person, even if sometimes they think, actually, this world is just full of suffering, why should I try to enjoy it? Even if such a person might sometimes think like that, because he is bewildered by the desire for material enjoyment and opulence, then he cannot get the determination to pursue that path. Now, this specifically refers to those who are attached to the apparent message of the Vedas, but it is true for everyone. For everyone in the material, every living being in the material world. Of course, not everyone has the opportunity to be opulent, although generally human beings desire that, but in any situation one can enjoy the senses, or as far as that proposition is actually real, because anyway, sense enjoyment is a phantasmagoria. There's no real thing as sense enjoyment, but it appears to be enjoyable, as Lord Krishna will explain later. Yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. That the endeavor, or the whole enterprise of trying to enjoy through the senses is fraught with misery in the contemplation, execution, and aftermath of such enjoyment. And therefore, an intelligent person just doesn't have anything to do with it. Of course, here at Govindadweep, there is all enjoyment and all opulence. Krishna is here, and although we may not perceive it, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He lives in transcendental opulence, but we don't perceive that spiritual opulence, and we also don't perceive any material opulence or much opportunity for sense enjoyment, because there isn't any, or at least not very much. Everywhere there's some opportunity for material enjoyment, but here particularly is a very good place for developing detachment from the possibility of material enjoyment, or the hope of material enjoyment. Only those who are very committed to serve Krishna without material, without overt material enjoyment, they can stay here and serve Krishna. Even householders have a license for sense gratification, but you don't have to indulge it. Just like persons in this country, persons over the age of 18 are allowed to do things like purchase alcohol and tobacco, but you don't have to do it. You're allowed to, but you don't have to. So here is an opportunity for householders to live in a manner in which their life is fully dedicated to the service of Hari, Guru, and Vaishnavas without gross distractions of sense enjoyment, just like the rishis of yore. Many of them were married, just like Vashishta and Arundhati. There are so many. Kashyap had several wives, among whom Aditi and Diti are the most famous. So the husband and wife, of course, Kardama Muni, his wife was raised in an atmosphere of great opulence, but she accepted the austerity of living with an austere sage. Nevertheless, it is even in an atmosphere where there's very little opportunity for sense enjoyment, it is prudent that we always consider that this desire for sense gratification is that which blocks our advancement in spiritual life. We often hear the question that, well, how can I go faster in devotional life? Or why am I going so slowly? This verse can be considered in regard to answering that question. There could be several answers to that question, but basically it's the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna that keeps us as if distant from Krishna. When we're not actually distant from Krishna, but we distance ourselves by our unwillingness to fully surrender to Him. So it's understood there is a process of sadhana bhakti, following the rules and regulations. That if we follow that, and especially with along with the varnashram regulations, they regulate our life in such a way that we can gradually, according to our present position, make advancement and become purified, which means free from material desires. And by the grace of Hari, Guru and Vaishnavas, go back home, back to Godhead. So in that process, there are rules and regulations, do's and do nots, based on anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, accepting everything that is favorable for Krishna's service, and rejecting that which is unfavorable. We should be cognizant of what is favorable and what is not favorable if we actually want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. We may think that, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, so okay, that's great, I'm on the way. But if we simultaneously perform activities that will block our advancement, then our progress is going to be severely hampered. For instance, to give that example, which might sound like I've said this, maybe I'll get a prize for the millionth time I say it. Watching TV. Now, why do I say it again and again? Because what was unimaginable, we often hear about the good old days when Prabhupada was here. Well, one of the things was that devotees, there was no one even thought about watching TV. So if you want to have the good old days, that's a good start. If we happen to have that anartha, we happen to be attached to that anartha of watching TV. That's an example. There are so many others. Eating foods which are prepared by non-devotees. Even for that matter, come to think of it, even water or fruit juice which is prepared by non-devotees, it may seem to be a very innocent food, and certainly it is, but those non-devotees who go to work in the water bottling factory or the fruit juice processing factory, most likely, most of them are meat eaters, and they don't have the habit of bathing after passing stool, so it's not that clean, anything prepared by non-devotees. So there are so many reasons why Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish these simple living and high-thinking communities. One thing is that we offer to Krishna that which is grown with love and prepared with love by devotees only. Actually, any food that has been touched by an unclean person at any stage is not it's not the best thing to offer Krishna, although we're constrained to by circumstances. And Srila Prabhupada has allowed that. And but traditionally, such things would not be offered to Krishna. That would be considered unfit to offer to Krishna. That's one reason. Another reason that we come in association with devotees and we get strength to overcome these anarthas. Personally, I can't understand why anyone who's interested in spiritual advancement would watch TV, which simply promotes calm, crowd, lobe, lust, greed, and anger. Now, I also watch documentary films produced by karmis, but that is for the specific purpose of getting information about topics to preach about what's what the karmis are thinking, doing, and saying, and how we can incorporate that into our preaching to make it relevant for people of the world today. Of course, it's always relevant, but they don't always see that. But to watch, to read novels or to watch dramas and cartoons. I don't know what devotees are watching on TV. I know what they're watching, but it seems to be widespread. But it's an obstacle in spiritual advancement. Eating food cooked by non-devotees. Those who are on the pure devotional path, they can't imagine it. I came across something. One devotee who was on his own, Mahatma Gandhi wrote his book, his autobiography, Experiments with Truth. He was also doing his own experimental process of Krishna consciousness. So living in Bengal, he was reading a novel about life in contemporary Bengal so that he could get some more idea of the whole ethos and atmosphere in which he's living. And when he mentioned this to one Bengali devotee, some respected Bengali devotee, that devotee was horrified. How can you read that? How can you divert your attention? Aren't you afraid of diverting your attention away from Krishna? With the understanding that we should only anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajanam, we should absorb our minds in topics of Krishna. Otherwise it's like we chant Hare Krishna, we pour petrol in on one side on a fire, and with the other hand we're pouring water, and we don't get a nice fire. If we pour petrol only, then we'll get a very good fire. But if we pour water also, then we'll get a lot of smoke, which is aparita chetasa. Srila Prabhupada translates this as bewildered in mind. Aparita, that which is different to the real need of our heart. We accept, or in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's terms, he would refer to persons who are apaswartha parayana, which means attached to that which is against their real self-interest. What could be more insane as to be attached to something which is against your own self-interest? We see that widely in the phenomenon of smoking cigarettes. If people think, I am this body and this body is to be enjoyed, then smoking cigarettes gives some immediate pleasure to them. It's a very strange thing, because to appreciate that pleasure, first of all, you have to go through, when you first start smoking cigarettes, it's not at all pleasurable, but you have to go through the displeasure so that you can get addicted to it, so that you can feel the urge to smoke. And then when you smoke, what a relief. I remember one friend at school, he'd come out of school and just rush out as soon as it's over, go out and light a cigarette. Because in school he had to go for some 3 hours from the lunch break to the time the school is out without smoking. What a relief. But as stated on the packets, smoking kills, smoking causes cancer, and so there are so many, but people are attached to it. It's foolishness, but they think, well, it's pleasurable, so let me do it, if it's pleasurable, with no consideration of future consequences. This is extremely foolish. Humans are meant to be more intelligent. They're supposed to consider what will happen in future. Wisdom, a wise person, one of the symptoms of a wise person is that he sees not only the present situation, but he considers how it can develop or how it's likely to develop in future, and acts not just in consideration of the present situation, but acts considering also the effects of it in the long term. But persons who are bewildered by the desire for sense enjoyment and opulence, they cannot become wise even materially. Although they may have some intelligence on how to develop their opportunities for sense gratification. They may be have the intelligence how to do business. They may be street smart or intelligent in performing business, and they think what will happen in future, okay, invest here and try this and do that, and they may be have some foresight in business, but we rarely find, in fact, I don't think you'll find any businessman who has a sense of contentment. They're never content. They always want more. They're always stressed. They're always feeling insecure that their business may collapse. That's why one devotee from Gujarati background in England told me that his generation, they came, actually he came from India, but most of the Gujaratis of that time, they came in the early 1970s from Uganda, having been kicked out of the country with only their life and one set of clothes by Idi Amin. They were wealthy, but they arrived in Britain, and by diligent hard work, they eventually became, if not very well-to-do, but quite well-to-do. Most of them owned shops and this and that, small businesses. So this devotee told me that the children of that generation, they're mostly going in for not having their own businesses, against the great Patel tradition. They're doing jobs such as being dentists and doctors and all this kind of thing. Because having seen their parents work so hard to build a business and maintain a business, they say, all right, let me have a job where I go in the morning, I come out in the evening, and then I just forget it. No stress. So that's a bit of worldly wisdom, maybe. So those who are cultivating desires for sense enjoyment, actually sense enjoyment is the basis. Opulence, that everyone can have sense enjoyment. Not everyone has great opulence, although those who desire sense enjoyment, they desire great opulence, but at least everyone in this material world is looking for sense enjoyment. And because of that, they can't become spiritually advanced. And that also in spiritual life, even those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, if they think that, well, Krishna loves me, so I'll make advancement even if I don't follow all these things. But if we don't follow, then where is our love for Krishna? Krishna gives the process by which we can become spiritually advanced, by which we can come to Him. And if we don't follow, that means that we're not actually very serious about advancing in Krishna consciousness. In this regard, Lord Krishna teaches Uddhava, Rideham Adyang, Sulabhang sudurlabhang plavan sukalpo guru karnadharam mayanukulena napasvateritam puman bhavabdhim nataretsa atmaha. Lord Krishna compares the human form of life, which is very rarely achieved, but which we have got now, and we're not likely to get again very soon, he compares it to a suitable boat for crossing the ocean of birth and death. And he says that if we have not only this suitable boat, but the opportunity to be guided by a competent guru, who's like a competent captain for guiding the ship, and we have favorable winds in the form of Krishna's instructions in Shastra, having all these advantages, Krishna says, if we do not cross the ocean of birth and death, it is as if we are committing suicide. We are condemning ourselves to remain in this material world. Again and again and again, birth after birth. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. So you may think, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, so I'm on the way. Yeah, we're on the way, but that warning is there also. Bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan tabuta napai krishna pade premadan. If one is infested with the offenses, then one can go on chanting and hearing about Krishna even for many lives and not attain love of Krishna. We have to know very clearly, on one side there is Krishna consciousness and on the other side is Maya. We are not expected, or it's understood, that we may not come to the highest standard very quickly, but there is a process to go up. And there are certain things that if we do, that will help us to go up, and there are certain things that if we do, will prevent us going up. That's why Srila Prabhupada, throughout his books and instructions, has clearly delineated all these things. So we shouldn't try to change that or reinterpret that. We should try to understand the spirit as well as the letter of the law. In other words, what Srila Prabhupada has given, his teachings, he may not say directly. For instance, he has, but he may not stress again and again. You may look through Srila Prabhupada's books and find that he only speaks a few times about not watching TV, more times about not seeing the cinema. I guess because one reason for that is that in India, where the culture that Srila Prabhupada was most attuned to, at the time when Srila Prabhupada was preaching, the television watching was not widespread, but cinema going was. So he stressed that he wrote very proudly in the sense of not in an arrogant way, but being pleased that my disciples, even though they had so many bad habits, they no longer go to the cinema. He writes in the Nectar of Divine, they have no attraction for such things. So, what are we cultivating? Krishna consciousness is a sort of cultivation, Srila Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, paraphrasing a verse which comes near the beginning of Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhila Ashita Shunyam Gyanakam Adhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktirutama. Anushilanam means cultivation. So cultivation of Krishna consciousness in a manner in which there is sincerely trying to come to the level of being free from desires for sense enjoyment, being free from the mental speculative tendency and the desire for impersonal liberation. Anyone who is cultivating devotion to Krishna in that way is considered to be on the platform of Uttama Bhakti. It's even in the cultivation stage. So these are very basic topics. That Krishna consciousness and the desire for sense gratification don't go together. But we increasingly find in the world of and around the society that Srila Prabhupada founded, an attempt to stretch the license to include within it so many things that probably you don't need a license, just forget the whole thing and you just become a criminal. Just like criminals, they don't bother about what they're allowed to do and what not allowed to do. They just do whatever they want to do as long as they can get away with it. And it might seem that we're getting away with it. But as Srila Prabhupada writes, the laws of nature are inscrutable. We do not see them working, but nevertheless, they work. So we should consider very carefully, what do we want? What are we here for? Are we here to serve Krishna? Are we here to become Krishna conscious? Do we really want that? If we really want that, we have to be really serious about that. If not, then we can do devotional service here, there, somewhat, and interact with the material world in ways that do not foster Krishna consciousness, but in such an endeavor, it's petrol one hand and water on the other. We're not really going to go anywhere very fast. We have to make the decision. What do we want? What are we doing? If we think, well, I'll put off the decision till later, then it becomes later, 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 and eventually death comes and it's too late to utilize this human form of life. Actually, we should be serious right from the beginning. Kaumara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. Durlabhang manusham janma tadapya dhruvamartatam. Even from the very beginning of life, one should very seriously practice Krishna consciousness, because this human form of life is very valuable, but it doesn't last very long. So we should utilize it for Krishna consciousness. As several of us who are present here, who are in or approaching the later stages of life, or even those who are in the middle age, can perceive, as the body grows older, it's a natural law that the body becomes less able to work, and it just to perform simple functions becomes increasingly difficult. And it's, on one hand, Krishna is giving us a warning that death is coming and prepare yourself for that. On the other hand, it could make us more and more bodily conscious, as we have to invest more time, energy, and thought into how to maintain the body in a workable state. So those who are still young, the nature when one is younger is to enjoy the body as there is more opportunity to do so. But that is not a wise policy. Do it now. Krishna consciousness, not sense gratification. That is the best advice. And yes, there is a license. That's allowed. We're not enjoined to try to undertake austerities on the level of Dhruv Maharaj or Raghunath Das Goswami. Srila Prabhupada has given us a lifestyle with some comfort. It means he encouraged us. Srila Prabhupada never encouraged extreme austerities for preacher, he would send devotees to preach in the USSR. That was a great austerity. But very difficult fasting or any such things. Even devotees were cold, as Srila Prabhupada would tell them, put on some warm clothing. So he wasn't promoting mortification of the body. And he gave us nice prasadam. He arranged for residences for the devotees to live with some modicum of comfort so that they could practice Krishna consciousness. But some activities we should know, they're just It just means that we're not going to advance. If we don't chant 16 rounds, if we don't follow four regulative principles, not three and a half or even three and three quarters, four regulative principles, then our advancement is going to be very slow. I have some comments here from Bhagavati Dasi. Read the class you gave on Thursday morning. I would make the comment that men, even in ISKCON, seem to be almost as weak-minded as women. They are often irresponsible and unable to control their senses. Sometimes women are stronger. In the light of this, when my daughter, who was born in ISKCON, was growing up and wanted a career, in order to have a means of maintenance in her adult life, I encouraged her. I thought it likely that it would be difficult to find a competent man who would be able to maintain her responsibly. That is what happened. She had marriage proposals from ISKCON boys. Since they were without any worldly ability to provide for her, she refused them and married a meat-eating atheist who is materially very responsible, although spiritually dead. Things seemed difficult, even in ISKCON, in Kali Yuga. Often what I say might seem to be disconnected from the reality of the situation that we're in. I would say that that's true also about many of the things that Srila Prabhupada said. He spoke about ideals, and in advising devotees on what we might call the practical day-to-day level, he often tolerated or even advised something non-ideal. One example comes to mind, there may be many, but this just comes to mind, in my mind just now, that some years ago I met an elderly man in Hyderabad who told me that he had approached Srila Prabhupada when Srila Prabhupada was there. In Hyderabad I meet many people who told me that they attended Prabhupada's lectures, there was a big success. One of my disciples, she's elderly now, she also, as a young woman, attended Srila Prabhupada's lectures in Hyderabad. So he told me he approached Srila Prabhupada and said that I do toddy business. Toddy is some kind of locally produced alcohol. But now, after hearing you, he said to Srila Prabhupada, he said, now I understand that's wrong. So what should I do? Should I give this up? And he told me that Srila Prabhupada thought about it for some time, for a few moments, and then said, well, you have to maintain your family. So that's an example of Srila Prabhupada being practical. Srila Prabhupada, there are so many examples. He said that Krishna consciousness takes charge of the world, we're not going to stop meat eating, but it should be restricted. It should be under religious principles, or even people, if they want to eat beef, they can do so. We'll give you the meat of cows that have died naturally. So Srila Prabhupada was often very practical, but at the same time, he was working toward an ideal. And we have to know what that ideal and is and work toward it. As long as we are in this present-day world, we're going to be caught up in its insanity and the conditions that make it unfavorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness. It's certainly unfortunate that a girl who grew up in Krishna consciousness is married to a meat-eating atheist, although in considering the circumstances, it might be best for her overall life, and I know of other similar such cases also. But that is our responsibility, which we really have to take seriously, to develop Varnashram and arrange opportunities for people, children who are born within the society of devotees, to remain within it and have their livelihood and everything without having to go outside, and to be responsible, dharmic, to that they get married and they the boy takes charge of the family and acts as what previously would be considered like a normal human being, but which nowadays it's not normal for people to act at the minimal human level that people used to act on. For instance, not very long ago in Ireland, well, in the Republic of Ireland, divorce was illegal, but even in Northern Ireland, it was unusual and for most people unthought of, and if anyone did it, it was considered reprehensible, although that's probably changed quite a lot now. I'm looking around, I don't see many Irish faces to reciprocate with me. Continuing. Read the first class you gave here on Wednesday morning about becoming a gopi in Golok Vrindavan. I would like to ask what your opinion is of the phenomenon of devotees appearing to be fast-forwarded at the end of life. Nearing the time of death, some devotees appear to become very much aware of Krishna Leela. Although they have been ordinary rank-and-file devotees throughout their devotional lives in ISKCON. I heard about this from a close friend who lived in Vrindavan for 11 years. She said she saw this happen several times. Also, the book, Simple for the Simple, describes how Balabhadra's wife in Scotland appeared to enter her gopi Siddha Swarup identity before leaving her body in this life. Also, Swarup Damodar Maharaj was said to be singing devotional songs in an apparently female voice in the mood of a gopi at the end of life. I feel cautious to accept these things as factual, but Srila Prabhupada did say one would go back to Godhead by following the path he chalked out. Yes, it seems there are quite a few devotees who serve in an apparently ordinary way throughout their life, and then at the end of life, they suddenly seem to exhibit symptoms of the highest perfection. That may be understood as kripa siddhi, the perfection attained by the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna. That is rare and unusual, although it seems by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. There are quite a few cases of this. Nevertheless, as Srila Prabhupada warned, we shouldn't think that, well, the universities, they give honorary degrees to people who never studied in the university. So I'll also get an honorary degree. But it's something that's unusual, which is awarded to persons whose achievements are exceptional. The normal process for getting a degree is to go to the university, study, do the prescribed work, and in that way, by diligence and application, one can attain a degree. So, yes, that special mercy we see has been manifested in quite a few of Srila Prabhupada's followers, but we shouldn't take it for granted and think, well, I'm eligible for that too. If we think like that, then we're ineligible. Generally, we'll find that mercy is bestowed upon devotees who've selflessly served throughout their life. And even earlier, there may be some such symptoms. But generally, devotees, they don't propagate. And one who's actually coming closer to Krishna, they don't propagate. Now I'm becoming a pure devotee. Anyone who propagates that, we can understand. Anyone who seeks to show that, well, I'm something very special, I'm very advanced, we can understand that they're on the very neophyte platform of wanting recognition. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Please. Yes, please.
What would you say about
watching devotional movies with multiple episodes, like Shri Krishna Balaram. Oh, Shri Krishna by Ramana Sagar. I did watch one of those for about 5 minutes, but they were so speculative that I decided not to watch any more. Well, Srila Prabhupada writes in a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that devotional drama should be performed by pure devotees, which I understand means those who are following the actual proper understanding and actually living as devotees. Some 30 years ago or so, Ramayan was broadcast on, in Hindi, was broadcast on Indian television every Sunday morning, and the whole of India would become, or at least North India, they would become empty. Everyone would be watching a TV. If you didn't have a TV, you'd find someone who'd have it. And there'd be women ready to offer the puja. When Ram came on, it was a big hit. But then the actress for Sita, she didn't like what the response that people started treating her very respectfully, as if she was a very respectable person. But she's a Bombay actress. And she wanted to go around in her sexy clothes and all this, and she was disgusted. She took that role for money, but she didn't like the implications of it. So, what do I think about watching that? I think I'd rather not. Yeah, it's better than watching. What is that, Rambo or something else? That's way out of date too. Whatever. I don't know what the latest crazy thing. So many devotees I heard saying about Matrix movie. It's very spiritual. And I was on a plane where I thought it was, actually, I was on the plane on the big screen, and there I saw some guy jumping out of a skyscraper window and flying over to another skyscraper. I thought, what is this? Adults are watching this? What is this nonsense? Then at the end I saw, it says, The Matrix. I thought, that's what, you want to watch that and think that's something very spiritual? So, better you tell the children the stories of Krishna. Better you personally tell them, instead of sitting with them in front of a screen. You tell them, you read from Prabhupada's books. You can. Dramas are very nice for children. They can be, they love to do that. They can be engaged in the dramas like that. So we can say that these commercially produced pastimes of Krishna, they may be better than something which is grossly sensual, but not the best. Not the best thing. Anything else? Yes, please. Yeah, okay, I'll just repeat that for the benefit of the recording. In England, it's very difficult for anyone to live in a devotional community, especially if they're married. That's true also in many places, most of the world, actually. It appears it's necessary to go outside and then everything else which comes with it. So again, I'm saying, therefore, Srila Prabhupada insisted we have to establish these communities so devotees can live as devotees. That was so much part of Prabhupada's program. And practically we bring people in and then we send them back out again to be. Even in fact, I heard at Bhaktivedanta Manor that Bhakta program is like that. You come in and you spend 1 year or something and then you go out. It's designed for people to go out. But going out means it's so difficult to be Krishna conscious, even if you want to be. Just earning a living puts you into bad association, you don't have time for sadhana, and it's just a disaster. It's amazing, all glories to those devotees who are maintaining their Krishna consciousness in those adverse conditions. But it's by no means the best. It's no, by no means ideal. Radhana Swami suggests that his disciples first get an education before they're trained up. Well, that's practical for living in the modern world, maybe, as long as it goes on in the way it goes on. Having an education in marine technology won't, for instance, won't help very much if the society ceases to go on its present course. For instance, if, as is widely predicted, the price of oil goes so high that the whole infrastructure of modern society can't be maintained, then who'll be in the best situation? The person who's sitting on the land growing carrots is going to be in a better position than someone with a degree in anything. So that's a technique, that's a practical adjustment to the modern age, but Srila Prabhupada had a much more far-reaching one, which was to establish communities in which devotees can live and produce their own food and clothing and live simply and be devotees, and that's also one kind of preaching. Certainly in America at the present time, if we had such communities, many, many people would come and join, even just for this. I mean, apart from the fact that so many people are fed up with the city way of life, many of them don't have a job at all and can't maintain anything, can't even maintain themselves except by begging at a stoplight. Many, with a whole green movement, many, many people would join. So that, yeah, that such a policy is practical, you could say, for the present time. Srila Prabhupada did also say that, Srila Prabhupada understood that not everyone's going to move to such communities. So it has use for the present circumstances, but I would first encourage devotees to go for the simple living, high thinking. And then if you can't do that, okay, think of something else. And there are householders. Recently, in the last few years in India, some devotees that I'm connected with have left their good jobs, earning lots of money, in which they're highly educated, to live on the land simply because they don't want to raise their children in the hellish society. That was the main reason. So they're doing that. And they're very happy in what they're doing. And others have tried to join them and have not adjusted. On the other hand, we find many people who do have university degrees and they don't get a job anyway. Just like in West Bengal, on local trains. I guess you haven't been on the local trains in West Bengal. Our devotees used to go up, down between Mayapur and Calcutta by the local train. Then you get people coming on and selling all kinds of things, including chanachur, muri masala, and all this kind of thing. Snacks. So one day I'm in a train and some guy comes in and announces that, I just like to let you know that actually I have a university degree, but I couldn't get any job, and so you can have a university degree snacks from me. And another time I saw an auto rickshaw, you know, these horrible which every one of them substantially adds to the world's pollution levels, and on the side it's written graduate driver. So he went through, you know, kindergarten. In India you have pre-kindergarten, kindergarten's already preschool, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, in the English system it would be primary school, secondary school, university, get a degree, and then get an auto rickshaw and drive it, which even if you never went to any school whatsoever, you could drive an auto rickshaw. So it may be good for some, but it's no guarantee. No guarantee of getting a job or any such thing. Or even if you have a job, there's no guarantee you're going to keep it, because one day the company may say, it was nice knowing you, goodbye. After 25 years or so. There are quite a few of the beggars on the streets in America are people who previously did have good jobs and big houses, and one day their company said, well, sorry, goodbye, can't afford to employ you anymore, or the company itself folded up. And they couldn't get a job because at their age, it was difficult. Companies would prefer to employ less qualified people. At their level, there are not so many jobs, and even for less qualified jobs, companies would rather employ someone at that level rather than an overqualified person. And someone, they'd rather employ someone who's younger, with the idea that they can train him and keep him in their company. So if at the age of 50, if you all of a sudden you've had a good job and you're out of it and you can't continue the payments on your house, so you lose your house, and in many cases you lose your wife also because she doesn't want to stick around when all the paraphernalia that she was used to is no longer around, then you end up on a stoplight saying, please give me work or give me a dollar. They hold signs up like this. So, for long-term security, to live on the land and produce food is a much more feasible program than getting a university degree. It's much more satisfying also. It's better in so many ways. Especially in Ireland. Yeah, Ireland's traditionally been a country of unemployed people. That's where so many Irish people go overseas because there's no employment at home. The land is so... That's a problem all over the world for devotees who want to establish devotional communities. The land is so expensive. Everywhere, in India also. Even if you get land, it's miles away from any city. But still, it's everywhere. It's so expensive. That's why, actually, as Srila Prabhupada wanted, our movement should get behind it. But at the present time, that's not happening. In fact, there's all this strategic planning is going on for years and years at the GBC level. Varnashram's not on the agenda at all, which I see as Guru Ravagya, disobeying the orders of the spiritual master, because it was a major part of Srila Prabhupada's program. So we're preaching, we're bringing people in, and then unless they're very pious, unless they come from a pious, mostly Indian people, they if they're in corporate life, it's very difficult for them to keep up a good standard. And then we preach that, well, it doesn't matter, it's all these things, you don't have to follow very strictly. And they're, yeah, it doesn't matter if you don't follow strictly. And then no one makes any serious advancement. And then we get into all kinds of things like worldly welfare work, because people can relate to that better. Our own devotees can relate to it better. And the whole idea of pure devotional service, it just becomes that, well, it's something we talk about, but where is it in practice? Things to consider. We really have to push. It's a pushing movement. We have to push ourselves and push others. And if we try to compromise with this world, then we're inviting trouble. To some extent we have to adjust ourselves to live in it, but really we have to try for, we have to make pure devotional service our aim, and not in a sahajya way, but in the very practical way that Srila Prabhupada showed us. And yes, one can be Krishna conscious, even while integrated with the modern world, but most devotees, they don't have the internal strength to do that. Then it becomes largely in many cases it becomes that you're largely on your own. There are devotional communities of people who are working in such situations, but it's not the ideal. And then you find that what's coming up next is making schools for our own children, in which they're trained from the beginning to be part of modern society. So the whole idea that we'll have such devotional communities when we live simply on Srila Prabhupada's order, according to our own ideals, it's nowhere in the program. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yeah.
I find myself kind of in a similar situation in regard to my children. I can't really do what I know after so many years of devotees writing to me, particularly in regard to my son, because we don't have specialist education within the vertical system. And I was wondering, is that, do we look at that as Krishna's special mercy? Do we look at that as Krishna's?
Your particular situation, should you see it as Krishna's mercy? Yeah, everyone should see their situation as Krishna's mercy. At the same time, we want to take Prabhupada's mercy in the form of his instructions so that we don't have to make it difficult for everyone forever. We want to create a favorable situation for performing devotional service. This material world, by its very nature, makes everything very difficult, especially in the modern age. So, definitely, in the beginning, especially, it's going to be very difficult. One of my godbrothers gave the example of D-Day, which was, I think, that was celebrated, the anniversary of it recently. That must have been, how many years? 44, 70 years. So that was the Allied forces landing in Nazi-occupied Normandy, in which the first wave of soldiers landing in amphibious vehicles, having crossed the English Channel, they were almost certain to be slaughtered. They were running into machine gun fire. But wave after wave, and eventually some of them got through, and then they were able to get to the Germans, and they were able to eventually conquer. But huge losses were inevitable. So my godbrother compared this, that in the beginning, as we're trying to establish this Krishna consciousness movement in an unfriendly environment, that we can expect there'll be many casualties, but we shouldn't take that as the norm. We have to keep on endeavoring so that we can establish a situation in which others can grow up in Krishna consciousness and not be subjected to the very difficult and unfavorable conditions that we now consider to be normal. So yeah, the difficult situation we're in, we can see it as Krishna's mercy also. that we should see everything as Krishna's mercy. But again, we should try to establish a situation in which is favorable for practicing Krishna consciousness. The problem with, or one of the many problems of training our devotees to become part of modern society is that the modern society is based on the principle of this verse, Bhogaishvarya Prasakta, being attached to worldly enjoyment and worldly possessions and worldly prestige. So sometimes I see even among devotees, it's like, well, I'm an educated devotee with a good job, and these others, they're just coming for the chapatis, that's all. And often, but it's not necessarily true that those who are coming who are not from a very prosperous background are not sincere. And it may be that sometimes we see devotees who are very educated. It's not true in every case, but it doesn't mean that just because you're educated. See, I'm taking to Krishna consciousness out of sincere spiritual desire. I don't need to take to it for my worldly well-being. But then we find sometimes some of the most educated, they get in some position and they're corrupt in a big way. They're trusted, but they're not trustworthy, or they may become attached to prestige and position. And so it's not, of course, there is no perfect formula within this material world. Establishing Varnashram doesn't mean that everyone's going to be a pure devotee, but it does give a better opportunity. And yeah, it's not, in one sense, it's everyone's responsibility, but then less so yours, because how much can you do as an individual housewife, or what do they call them nowadays? Homemakers. It's really the responsibility of the leaders of this society to lead the devotees in this way, as Srila Prabhupada envisaged. In the absence of a society-wide endeavor, then it becomes up to individuals to do so. And often being discouraged, unfortunately, by devotees saying that you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't send your children to be educated the way that Srila Prabhupada wanted them to be educated, you should educate them so they get a good job, otherwise how are they going to survive in future? Often our own devotees are against this because they think that's the way it should be done. We should, responsible means we have to train our children to become part of the modern society. Well, materially speaking, it might seem like that, although the way things are going, it might be more responsible to train them how to grow carrots. But spiritually, that responsibility is there. Guru na sasyat, svajano na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat, daivang na tasyan. Na patischa na sasyat, na mochayad ya samupetya mityam. As Srila Prabhupada often quoted, unless one can deliver one's dependents from birth and death, or at least do the very best you can do, then one should not become a guru or a relative or a father or a mother. Accept respect from anyone, become a husband. So, these are some considerations. Anything else? How can we overcome the fear of surrendering to Krishna? Well, how can you overcome the fear of swimming? Just jump in the pool. And you will have overcome the fear. You might be still fearful, but at least the fear that holds you back will be gone, because you can't think about, once you're in the water, you can't think, shall I get in it or not? Then you have to think how to survive in it. So that was the program, at least when I joined. Whether you surrender or not, it's not an option. You often, even whether, really, I mean, in many cases, devotees were brought in and, okay, it's, we've got you here and now it's time to shave you up. And that was Prithu Prabhu's policy. They can't run away if they're shaved up. And it actually worked in many cases. But then, okay, now, all right, now you clean the floor. All right, you've done that for 10 days, that's enough. Now out on the streets, and distributing books. What the books are about, why we should be selling them, no idea. But gradually you learn as you go along. That was the program. So fear, all anarthas can be overcome by associating with devotees who have gone beyond those anarthas by hearing Srila Prabhupada's books and just by going on in devotional service, and then we'll experience pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. It's actually very enjoyable. It's very pleasant to be a devotee of Krishna. It's much better to be in Krishna's shelter than doing anything else. Karmis, they don't have festivals like Janmashtami. They have Christmas, but what is that? Just some heightened sense enjoyment, that's all. There's nothing, they don't have such nice things. Even some months ago, I was at a farm project where one devotee who had come from the city said to me that, well, actually, I find it very difficult in many ways to be here. I said, yeah. You knew that before you came, but consider what you're getting spiritually. When you were living in the city, did you rise early every morning, have a full morning program, live with devotees only throughout the day and work with them? You didn't have any of that. And I said, no, I didn't have that. I said, well, you didn't have any of those advantages. So materially it's difficult, but spiritually it's there's no comparison. I'm going to finish now because it's getting a bit late. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.